You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Yes, hello, welcome along to the William Hill Racing Podcast. We're going to look ahead to Tuesday's action on this edition. You'll hear it all live on William Hill Racing Radio from 1:50pm with Darren Owen, James Millman and John Babb in the studio. We've got Nottingham, Brighton and Newcastle on Tuesday afternoon, Huntingdon and Hexham in the evening on the domestic front, and a twilight card over in Ireland as well from Gorham Park. So plenty to get stuck into. My name is Mark Walton and joining me in the studio is Rory Delaghi. How are you, Rory?
I am very well, thanks.
Good. Good man. We're going to start with a look at the Monday jury in the Racing Post. A few questions with regards to the Derby and the Oaks and such, and then we'll move on to Tuesday's action on the back of that. So, first question, Rory, with trial season at an end, who's your fancy for the Derby? Big news, of course, about the Derby is that Churchill's not going to go there. So.
Yeah. Which was half expected anyway.
Yeah.
But, I think every time I do the Monday jury, the first question is who's going to win the Derby?
Yeah.
We say the Cheltenham Festival gets talked up too much through the jump season, but yeah, we're always looking at the Derby from the start of the flat season. But in fairness, this is a good time to be doing it, or it should be. But to be honest, the trials have been confusing.
Yeah.
In the main, and it's interesting that those who've been asked about the Derby in the Monday jury are talking as much about the Epsom Derby trial run earlier in the spring, as they are about the big races, or the more established Derby trials.
Yeah,
Epsom not normally. The one point I would make about that is this: people are saying, "Oh well, Cracksman has experience of Epsom; that'll be a positive." I could not disagree more.
Really,
I think you run a horse 10 times around Epsom, the chances of it running to its form, the last of those times are very slim indeed. It's one of the, you either handle Epsom or you don't handle Epsom. Getting practice of Epsom does not help you handle it. Most top class horses will deal with it perfectly well first time, but it won't necessarily be beneficial to them in terms of how they go around that and the nature of the track. So giving them practice in the track, I think, is of dubious value, and that's backed up historically by the fact that top trainers don't tend to run their horses in the Epsom Derby trial. And this year we got rather a confusing picture, and the front two from that race are reasonably prominent in the Derby betting. The horse I nailed my colours to the mast with the last time I did this, I'm going to stick with despite a slightly disappointing run last time out, and that's Eminent, who was sixth in the Guineas, but not beaten very far, and the Guineas was a farce. A really, really strong race on paper, much stronger than any other trials that have been run, but rather spoiled by the fact that the Coolmore boys got the tactics spot on.
Yeah.
They didn't go hard in front. They spoiled Godolphin's chances of winning the race by doing so. Godolphin need to have a look at themselves in terms of tactics, but that's another debate altogether. But Eminent is a horse who wants a really strongly run mile if he's going to be effective at that trip, which he got in the Craven Stakes. The nature of the Guineas didn't really play to his strengths. He really wasn't beaten very far in the end. He will improve certainly for a step up to at least a mile and a quarter. And I said before the Guineas that if there's a Derby winner in the race, it'll be Eminence and not Churchill. Not because I didn't fancy Churchill's chances, but I didn't think he'd be going to the Derby or improving for a step up to a mile and a half. I think Eminent will. It's not quite the perfect prep for that race. He's had two runs this season. Nice break to get over the Guineas if he needed to get over that. And he's still a fair price for the big race at Epsom. So
yeah.
I'm not going to desert him now.
He's 10-1 in the market at the moment. Cliffs of Moher and Cracksman are the 4-1 joint favourites. Eminence is 10-1, 12-1 best solution. Permian, who still needs to be supplemented, the Dante winner is 14-1. Venice Beach 14s, Yucatan also 14-1, and 16s bar those. A bit of a side note, if you like, to the Derby. Some Aidan O'Brien specials, given that he's already won both classics, might be so far this season, might be interesting. 5-4 for him to train the Derby winner. We've also got his top runner in the Derby as well, so you don't need to win the race, just get the one that finishes best of his. Cliffs of Moher 11-10 in that market. Venice Beach 11-2 with Yucatan, 13-2 for Capri, and Douglas MacArthur and 12-1 or bigger prices for the others.
Yeah, the going's going to make a big difference there. We don't know quite what to expect. That will change the shape of the race to a degree. Yucatan would be interesting with Aidan's horses if the ground came up fast, but I think he does need it very quick.
Yeah. He's 11-2 in that market, so just to finish best of the O'Brien bunch.
And I guess that's a market that's going to still exist on the day of the race, isn't it?
Yeah, I presume so, yeah. Also, you can... There's quite a few. You can also name the number of classics that Aidan O'Brien will win this season. He's already got two of them. That's 7-2. The favourite is 3, even money. He obviously has a good chance in the Oaks as well, doesn't he? 9-4 for 4 winners, 7-2, 2, and 10-1 for 5, should he win all 5 classics.
It's not the worst... It's not the worst price in the world, is it?
Mm.
Given that he will have a proper go at the St. Ledger.
Yep. Still does, which is refreshing.
Arguably unlucky to not win it last year when the odds on favourite unseated his rider. And he's got a very strong hand. Got the favourite in the Derby, got the very strong favourite in the Oaks, which we shall come to very shortly.
Oh, what a tee up that is. Let's move on to that then now. And what about the Oaks is the next question.
Yeah, I'm not gonna knock Rhododendron at all, but there's two fillies that I've backed at big prices in the Oaks, and they both come out of the same race, which hasn't really got a mention in the Monday jury, despite the fact the race was run on Saturday. The Oaks Trial at Newbury, I thought, was a stronger race than you might judge it to be after the event, because it was a small field and they were stretched out by a big distance. And there's two ways of looking at a race where there's big gaps between all the runners. One is that it's weak form, in that horses mustn't have given their running to be beaten so far. And Generous Diana, for example, was beaten a long way into fourth. But the other way of looking at it is the winner is very good, and therefore is creating big gaps between the other runners by running to a high level. The interesting thing about that race, as far as I can see, despite the fact we had the Lockinge on that day and a race for speedy two-year-olds, the fastest closing sectional of the day came in the mile and a quarter fillies trial. It's 50 seconds, just a fraction over 50 seconds for the last 4 furlongs, which is faster than the Lockinge, faster than the other race run over the course and distance during the day, faster than the 6 furlong race. And obviously, it's not simply a case of picking out a fast time and saying that it must be very good. Clearly, there's an element of them going fairly slowly early on to produce that time. But in saying that, it's still remarkable that they could do that for 4 furlongs. If you compare that with 6 furlong times, it still comes out looking very good. And I thought both the winner and the third shaped extremely well there. The winner, Natavia, daughter Nathaniel, is bred to stay very well, and she won it in very good style in the end by over 3 lengths. And she's 16s for the Oaks in the back of that. She represents the same connections as one or two at shorter prices in there, but not the same connections. She represents Roger Charlton. I think Roger Charlton would be quite keen to run her, but obviously Khalid Abdullah has other options in the race. But I thought Natavia was very impressive, and she's not the kind of filly you'd want to take to France for the Prix de Dan over a shorter trip. She will want the mile and a half, and obviously if there's a bit of ease in the ground, that won't be a problem to her. But she ran really well on her debut over on good to firm ground at Newmarket, so she seems not to be ground dependent. And I thought that has been massively underplayed, that performance. I thought it was a really, really smart performance. And if you look through the history of the Oaks, you know, we tend to look at horses who've run in Group 1 races before and they produce the biggest ratings going into it. But historically, you're looking for a filly who's going to peak at this time of the year, maybe who's only had a couple of runs. One of the most impressive winners I've seen in a classic at Epsom was Sun Princess, who was still a maiden coming into the race. And I think Natavia's got a very good profile for it. The other one I liked in the race, again, one who's only had two runs, only won a maiden, was the third home, Al Jazeera. She led early there and then got rather left behind, but she was keeping on again without being knocked about at all by Frankie Dettori in the last furlong. And she just gave the impression she needed the run. She's a big, good-looking daughter of Frankel. I don't want to bang on about Frankels because I'm sick to death of hearing about who's the next, you know, son or daughter of Frankel to win a decent race. And he obviously got his classic winner in Japan the other day. But she's very untypical. She's quite quiet. She's big. She's scopey. She will improve an awful lot. I was really impressed by her physically at Doncaster last season, which she won her maiden, which wasn't a terribly strong race. But just her demeanour before the race, her looks, her professionalism stood out. I think there's a hell of a lot more to come from her. Whether they run her in the Epsom and in the Yokes on the back of that, I'm not sure. But I think she's interesting. She's 50-1, I think.
Yeah, 52.
And so I'd be inclined to throw a few quid at her. And then if she's confirmed for the race, she's not going to be coming into 10-1. You're still going to get 25s or thereabouts about her. So I'd look to press up then. But that race has been ignored and it shouldn't have been.
Mm. Yeah, Natavia 12-1 and 50-1 for Al Jazeera. The market's still headed by Rhododendron, who's 13-8, Enable 7-2, 7-1 Coronet, Horseplay 12-1 with Natavia, Sabetsu and Winter, and 16-1 on bigger prices for the others. What did you make of the Lockinge?
I thought Ribchester was very impressive, as everyone did.
Yeah,
I don't think he actually had to improve an awful lot to do that. He had to prove that he trained on fully. And he's probably run to the level that he was showing at his best last season, maybe a couple of pounds above that, based on Breton Rock, who's very reliable given his soft ground. Clearly, it wasn't quite the clash that we imagined. Galileo Gold has become disappointing. Connections looking for reasons for that and hoping to reinvent him. They weren't worried about the ground going into the race, and they suggested that might have been an issue afterwards. Also, the straight mile has been put forward as a potential issue for him. The problem with Galileo Gold is he's not professional, you know. And if they can force him into a scenario where he concentrates on what he's doing, then he has the potential to repeat the form of his Guineas win, or indeed a St James's Palace win, which is probably the stronger form. But mentally, he's been off his game since winning at Royal Ascot. You know, if you watch him when he was beaten by Ribchester in France last year, he just got, you know, he pulled far too hard for his head. He wasn't racing; he was just trying to take charge of his jockey, and it was a similar story later in the season. And although the reports from him at home were that he was much more relaxed and he'd grown and he looked more mature and more professional about doing things, he didn't look like that on the race course, and they've got to find a way. The obvious way of doing it is gelding him, which is clearly not an option for a classic winner. But if he was doing this and he was a 70 rated horse, the first thing you'd do, you'd cut him and stick a hood on him. But that's not really an option for him. They're talking now about running him around a bend. I can see the logic of that. It's easy to say, well, how can you say he's not suited by a straight mile when he won the Guineas? But the problem is, if you put him on a wide open course and jump him out the stalls, he's just, you know, he just wants to run into the distance, and he's not going to race professionally. In a race round a bend, he can get a bit more cover, and there's more chance you can get him settled. But in saying that, this is an ongoing problem with him now. It's not easy to solve, and they've done plenty at home to get that sorted. The obvious thing is to put a hood on him, obviously. Which isn't going to damage his prospects as a stallion, and it might just make him a little bit easier to handle. But anyway, Ribchester was very impressive, and interestingly, he also had a reputation of pulling hard for his head last season.
Yeah.
But with him, it came across much more as enthusiasm, and he wasn't a difficult ride, but it looked like it might compromise him slightly, and it looked like he was therefore dependent on tactics. He needed a strong run race and cover. Didn't get that at all at the weekend. And yet run out an impressive winner. For me, he's only improved marginally on what he's done before, if at all. But what he has done is he's shown much greater scope. He can now be put wherever they want him in a race. He can run in a small field. He's effective on quick ground and on soft ground. So he's looking fairly bomb-proof.
Mm. He's 7-4 for the Queen Anne as well. Would that tempt you?
Yeah, well, yeah, he's blindingly obvious for the Queen Anne.
Yeah.
Even if you did rate Galileo Gold, who's looking a slightly unlikely runner there, and clearly now Ribchester's beaten him in his last three starts anyway, easily. Yeah. So that's not really that much of an issue. And the Queen Anne will be no problem for him.
7-4, Ribchester. Galileo Gold 7-1 for that particular race. Who caught you right at the Dante meeting?
Not a huge number because of the ground, but the three I put up would be, and they're fairly obvious ones as well. Crystal Ocean very much caught the eye in the Dante.
Yep.
He'd been punted for the Derby before that. Michael Stout poo-pooed that suggestion and, you know, said he will miss the Derby. But he has always looked the type of horse who would go Edward the VII anyway. And I can see him winning the Edward the VII, which Michael Stout has a very good record in, and coming back and being like a Hardwick King George horse next year.
Yeah.
He wants a mile and a half. He kept on really well without being knocked about in the closing stages of the Dante, which is a solid race. You know, for all you wouldn't really fancy the winner for the Derby because he's had, you know, he's shown what he can do several times. He doesn't seem to have the scope one or two others in the race, but he's a very solid performer at this stage and he produced a career best on the day. And Crystal Ocean very much caught the eye on given that he was very inexperienced compared to the winner, and he'll improve chunks. And two from the Duke of York Stakes, which has probably run a slightly too strong a pace for the conditions. And suited horses coming from a bit off the pace. Magical Memory and the Tin Man were both running without a prep run and both shaped very well in the race. Neither of them lasted home entirely. But Magical Memory was still close up in the finish, and the Tin Man wasn't knocked about as he dropped. He didn't drop away. Where did he finish? Fourth or fifth in the end?
Yeah.
They will both improve a chunk for that run, and they'll be big players in the Golden Jubilee or the Diamond Jubilee or whatever they call it these days at Royal Ascot. The Cork and Orrery.
Which juveniles have impressed you so far this season? Nice open question for you there.
Yeah, I'm just going to put one up there, and it's one who ran yesterday, Alpha Centauri. She's a monster.
There you go, simple as that.
Yeah, let's not mess around with naming several. And it's interesting that we have this this Irish-English split. It is possible to look at races in Ireland if you live in England and see a horse who is exceptional. And yet none of the English-based people seem to spot Alpha Centauri at all, who bolted up on her debut, bolted up again yesterday. We're just scratching the surface with her. She is, Jesse Harrington pointed out that she's over 500 kilos, which is very unusual for a two-year-old filly at this stage of the season. So we keep talking about Wes Ward turning up with these two-year-old fillies who look like four-year-olds at Royal Ascot. Well, clearly she's not going to be dwarfed in the paddock by anything when she turns up for the Albany Stakes. And she just looks absolutely top-notch.
Mm. Price-wise, is tackling the Gold Cup tomorrow. Who's your pick?
Well, the obvious thing is Say Order St. George. He's clearly not going to be the price-wise pick tomorrow because he'll put up 15-to-8 favourites, Andy Post. But yeah, he is the standout because he's been there and done it. He's going to be a better horse this season. The horse who beat him last time out is interesting enough. Jesse Harrington's horse. But at slightly bigger prices, I've always been a fan. And Simple Verse, it is well worth a try at 2 miles and beyond.
Yeah.
Well, she's been tried at 2 miles already. She was placed in the Champion Stayers race at Ascot last season. She was disappointing at the Royal Meeting last year, but she wasn't right in the first half of the year. Her first couple of runs were awful for me, and then she picked up the pieces again in the autumn. Maybe you could argue she's the type of mare who now comes into her own in the autumn, but she ran a really good race in the Yorkshire Cup, which she should have needed. And has only been touched off there despite racing on the other side of the track to the winner. She'll certainly improve for that, and I think she'll improve for a step up beyond 2 miles as well. So she's a very interesting player if they choose to go there with her.
Order St. George 7-4 in that market. Vizirabad is 7-1, Simple Verse 12-1, 14 Sweet Selection, 16's Beautiful Romance and Big Orange, and also Idaho and several others in fact as well. If they turn up, it'll be a good race.
If you 40 odd runners in there at the moment, and a lot of them are very interesting. We like Stayers, don't we? One more to mention there, just in terms of a story. A Sweet Selection wins the Gold Cup. That will please a lot of people, trained by Hughie Morrison, who's obviously going through this very difficult scenario with a failed dope test on one of his horses, which logic pretty much states that shouldn't possibly have been done by him or anyone in his yard, because, you know, it's proper. This is not a medication still in the system. It's an anabolic steroid, which would only be performance enhancing, and there's no way they were trying to enhance the performance of this very moderate filly who was immediately retired after one more run. So the question is, who's done it? Why have they done it? And can they find out?
Yeah.
So that's a fairly serious scenario, and he could lose his license for 10 years according to the rules. So if he managed to bag the Ascot Gold Cup, it would, I was going to say thumb his nose at authority, but that's not really an issue. He knows exactly what the rules are all about. He knows that the case has to go ahead, but no one in racing thinks that Huey has ever been up to no good. And therefore, that would be a popular result.
Hmm. That's the Monday jury then for another week. We'll leave that there. We'll move on to Tuesday's racing. Rory's got four races prepared for us. We'll get his thoughts next.
William Hill Racing Radio. It's everything to give you the inside track.
On to Tuesday's action then. The 3:30 at Nottingham is where we start, and this is a filly's handicap over a mile and a quarter. It's for the 3-year-old fillies, and we've got some interesting runners in there. D'Alta's only had the one start. It was a winning one. You've got some unexposed types in there as well as you get in these 3-year-old fillies handicaps. Not always the easiest puzzle to solve, but who do you like?
Yeah, well, the 3-year-old handicaps are tougher this time of the year, and fillies races are tough as well. So thank you very much for starting me off with this.
Yeah.
D'Alta is the obvious one, the daughter of High Chaparral out of a Curly and Mare. She's bred to improve from 2 to 3. The only worry with her is she was she gets the comments small filly on the Timeform race card, and how much scope she has for progress is a slight question mark. But size isn't everything in this game. You know, we hear all the time, there are big scopey horses who can't run the length of themselves, and small nippy fillies tend to win plenty of races. So if you don't judge her purely on her size, I think she's the most obvious winner of the race. If you are put off by that, and you might well be, that might be how you look at things. I thought Carl was interesting enough as well for Ed Dunlop and Oisin Murphy. She comes from a very good mile and a quarter, mile and a half family. Her best run last year came on her only try at a mile, and she was rather strangely dropped by the 7 furlongs on her final start last year. And she's improved or got back to the form of that Ascot run when fourth at Nottingham. Over this course and distance last time out, despite the fact the race was run quite slowly, which wouldn't have suited her. There have been winners either side of her in that race subsequently, and she's in a well-run race, she is sure to go close. So she's a fairly solid selection. But if you're looking for the one who might prove to be a cut above, then it's D'Alta.
Okay, D'Alta then, the nomination there in the 3:30 at Nottingham. We'll move on to Brighton next. The 3:50 is the race we're going to look at on their card. A Class 5 handicap over just short of a mile and a quarter. We've got a field of 10 set to go to post here. We've got the likes of Roy Rocket and Becca Campbell, who arrive here in winning form. Both of them course and distance winners as well, which is always a help at Brighton. But there's several in there with chances, Rory.
There are. Roy Rocket is a multiple course winner, and you've got to respect his chances. Bridge of Sighs, another course and distance winner from a yard in good form, that of Martin Smith. But the pick here is Deep Challenger for Jamie Osborne. Very, very well bred. He's a full brother to one of Aidan O'Brien's Derby entries, Utah. And he's a horse who clearly had his problems last year. Cost 500,000 as a yearling or even as a foal, and only raced once for his previous yard in Ireland, and that was a very good run. He finished 5th of 22 in a decent Curragh maiden in May last year. It was then off for a long time and resold for 22 grand, but he's improved with every race for Jamie Osborne, and stayed on strongly over an extended 9 furlongs at Wolverhampton last time out. He will appreciate the return to turf, and he will appreciate the step up and trip as well, and he looks like he might just be thrown in here off a mark of 73.
Okay, interesting stuff. Deep Challenger then, the interesting one in the Brighton race there. We move on to Newcastle next for their 4:10, and this is a 7 furlong Class 3 handicap, and we've got a field of 9 set to go to post here. The likes of Custard the Dragon and Morning Suit arrive here chasing hat-tricks. You've got the unexposed Omran in there as well. And quite an interesting race, really.
It is. There's no doubt about that, and the pick for me is Omran, who won on his second start on the Polytrack at Chelmsford, and then he ran in what was an extremely hot 3-year-old handicap at Newbury, where he finished a close fourth. That was behind Bacchus, the third home winning ways was successful next time out. And the fifth home, Zamjar, also won in his next start. So Omran racing off just a 1 point higher mark, looks well treated on that. The only negative, and it's just a marginal query, Omran was close to the pace, which wasn't overly strong that day. They did not go fast from the start. And the pair who he split came from further back. Probably deserve a bit more credit for that. But in saying that, the overall form of the race does look very warm. For example, there was a last time out winner in the race in a handicap who went off at 33-1 in that Newbury contest. And when you've got a last time out winner who goes off at that kind of price, it shows that the overall form of the race is, or the strength of the race, is something exceptional. So while Omran may have been marginally flattered in his position compared to the Perry split, he still looks like a horse going places.
Mm. Interesting runner, Omran, there in the 410. Son of Schwazi, could be open to quite a bit of improvement there. The final race we look at is a bit of jumping from Huntingdon, the 8.05, a 3 mile, 1 furlong handicap hurdle, a field of 9 set to go to post for this one. Who do you side with in our final race?
Midnight Monty. Pretty straightforward, I think. There are horses in this race who might come out better looking at individual pieces of form, but Midnight Monty, having lost his way over fences, got right back on track in his second start for Tom Lacey when winning a handicap over course and distance last time out, where he made all the running and found plenty for pressure. That was with blinkers on for the first time. He's only up £5 for that. I think that's a very fair rise. And he's bred much more for this game. He is a son of a very smart racemare called Morello, who did really well for Mary Reevely. She was champion hurdle class, but she stayed 3 miles. Midnight Monty runs in the same colours. Obviously, Keith Reevely used to train him, but has retired now, and the horse has gone to Tom Lacey. So one poor run over fences for the yard, and then a breakthrough over hurdles over course and distance, and there's more to come.
Midnight Monty, then, the pick in the 8.05 there for Rory. As usual, a little bit of a quick summary before you go, Rory, if you wouldn't mind just confirming your selections for us then for Tuesday.
Sure. In the 3.30 at Nottingham, the Phillies handicap, D'Alta can maintain her unbeaten record. Over at Brighton, Deep Challenger looks well treated off 73 and can outclass his rivals. The 4.10 at Newcastle can go to Omran, who comes out for a very warm race at Newbury. And finally, the 8.05 at Huntingdon, Midnight Monty was a course and distance winner last time out. He seems well treated off a 5 point higher mark.
Superb. Thank you very much, Rory. Good luck and enjoy it on Tuesday.
Thank you.
There you go. The thoughts of Rory Delaghi on Tuesday's racing. Then you'll hear it all live from 1:50 p.m. with Darren Owen, James Millman and John Babb live in the studio. It's Nottingham, Brighton and Newcastle in the afternoon, Huntingdon and Hexham in the evening on the domestic front, and Irish action as well from Goram Park. A twilight meeting there, so plenty to get stuck into. Do tune in for that. Thank you very much for listening to this William Hill Racing podcast and enjoy Tuesday's action.
ACCA 5 is William Hill's new ACCA insurance. It means if you have a 5 selection accumulator and one lets you down, you'll get your money back as a free bet. And it's available across all sports. ACCA 5, exclusive to William Hill. T's and C's apply.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.